welcome to the Black House. Wow, it's been a while since I've been on the mic. It's been a couple of weeks. It's been full on hectic. And we're in the... Sorry, there's stuff on my mic. We're in the house today with our two guests. We got Reese Stein.
Correct.
And Liban Ali, also from Wellington. Both presidents of their student associations at VALSA, at Victoria University. But before we start with you guys, I just wanted to make a couple of announcements because I'm a bit thrilled. I'm feeling myself today. I'm not allowed to talk to our tech guy. He's behind the mic over there. Old Craig Doobie from Swana FM. He's not saying anything because he's silent tech today. And also behind the camera, we got TJ, the man who produced our theme track. So, but what I'm really excited about today, to be honest with you, is that we got syndicated, baby.
Yeah.
Very
good.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I was actually thinking, oh, we'll get one. But then we got four, and it's just amazing. And now that means we go nationwide, and it's just bigger, and it's better, and it's going to be so much fun. So if you want to hear us in Auckland, we're on Planet FM 104.6. Also, Kirikiriroa, that's Hamilton, H-Town, Free 89 FM, Christchurch and Otautahi, Plains FM 96.9, and Dunedin, Otipoti, OAR 105. I don't know if they call it OAR, 105.4 FM. So that's crazy. Four stations picked up our show.
Wow.
Our show, 5 years, the team. We've got to thank the Black House team and all the people who've come, been and gone and come back and gone again and just got involved with creating the stories. It's 5 years we've been on air. It'll be June 13th.
Near your birthday, right?
Yeah. Just after.
Just after.
It was when we came out of COVID. Mm. We were going to start at the beginning of the year, and then we got locked down again.
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as we came out of COVID, we just jumped into it. So it'll be 5 years in June. But the work is everyone that's come through the door and jumped on the mic and had a little bit of a kororo with us. Yeah. And you know what I mean? And it belongs to everybody because the Black House is our house. It was created with the intention of holding space for our community. And so we got to thank everybody. Get your flowers.
Thank
Here's
you.
All your flowers.
Give you your flowers. on your birthday, hey?
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking about, I don't know, what am I doing? We're not doing events at the moment.
Yeah.
The Black House has just been full on, you know, trying to get support, trying to get the tech that we need. If anybody feels generous, they can go to our Give a Little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, support.
Yeah, drop some coins.
Black House.
We need the tech equipment so we can produce something classy.
Definitely.
At the moment, the workaround is going live, and it's sort of clunky, but it's what we're doing. And it fills in the gap, but it's not the presentation that I'm kind of visualising in my head. I like something like a little more flash.
A little flash?
A little flash, a little bit more sophisticated.
There's always potential, right? There's always potential to switch it up.
Yeah, and you know, anybody's got skills in that direction, come see us.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So the other announcement quickly before we get into this interview is the Smith family are going to have a remembrance on April the 18th. It's Good Friday, 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. to 3:30 at the Reading Cinema Central Bus Stop. Mm-hmm. And the street address is 102 Courtney Place, and extended whānau's in town. And they want to set off some white balloons, say some prayers, sing some songs, and share some cupcakes. So we got all that sorted. And this is in remembrance of Luke, because that's not over. And we'll get back to the petition and all that later in the interview. But anybody who wants to bring some white helium balloons, you know where to go. Look Smart and Tory, Warehouse Spotlight, or any of the discount stores that sell helium balloons. Just go grab you one and come and share some cupcakes with the family.
Some cupcakes are going to be
cupcakes. They're going to bring the cupcakes,
nice.
And that's his birthday remembrance, and it's granny's here, sister's here. So, you know, all you guys that came out and supported us. I know. So all these guys that came, sorry, it's just tech in the background. All these guys that came out, all of the young people that came out and supported during those months, come out again. Mm-hmm. It's his birthday.
Definitely.
Come out and show your support.
Yeah. Yeah. So today we have the two Valza, stop, why do I say Valza all the time? We've got the Valza president, V-U-W-S-A, so that's Victoria University of Wellington.
VUSA.
I would say Valza, I don't know why. VUSA president, Levan Ali, and we've got the VADSA president, Reese Stein. And so we're just going to have a little chat about, you know, what are you thinking about for 2025? Yeah. Are you and do you go have your terms of like 1 year, 12 months, or is it?
We'd like to think it's 12 months. Mm. I'm for my term. I'm president for, I think, in the Constitution it says about a year.
Okay.
But I'll possibly get re-elected, depending how big our group is at the moment. We're growing significantly this year.
Great.
It has been a significant growth.
Great. Yeah. That's awesome. You can tell us a little bit about yourselves first, and then I'll get into the first question. Oh. So do you want to start first, Reese?
I think the show knows me. I'll start talking.
Yeah, I can go. Kia ora koutou. My name's Levan Ali. I am the president of Te Akatauri VUSA, so that's the Victoria University of Wellington Students Association up at Vic.
Yeah.
We're basically the umbrella student association that covers all the student body at the university.
Wow.
We advocate for them, so we do a lot of work. We provide services as well at our office on level 4 at Calburn campus. I've been a part of VUSA for 3 years now. Been on the executive for 3 years, got elected in 2023, and the clubs and activities role, that was 10 hours, and then got re-elected in 2023 again for the 2024 executive, which was in a welfare vice president capacity.
Okay.
Doing anything around welfare.
So, like, is that like housing and
housing,
student allowance,
but overall students' well-being is when they're studying, right?
Yeah.
Because I care a lot about that. I don't think you can succeed in your academic life if your body's not in the right place or if your mind's not in the right place.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And finally, last year, I got re-elected as the president of VUSA. So, very important role. It's a very high-capacity role. It's a one-year term, so started 1st of Jan all the way until the 31st of December. So, I'm in a very high-profile position, I'd say. I'm very front-facing, do a lot of advocacy, advocating to politicians, a lot around policy, but also doing some other cool stuff around, you know, operational side of organizing O Weeks,
which we put on
for,
and that's a big production.
Yeah, we do. We put a shit ton of money into it. I'm not gonna lie, but it turns out to be one of our biggest events for our students. I think this year our biggest event had 1,800 students in the hub. So that was the toga party, dedicated to the
it's so Greek.
Yeah. So Greek. But honestly, do a lot of things for the students. I've always been a part of student politics. I enjoy student politics. Grew up in the Hutt Valley, Nanai Lower Hutt. So when I finished up,
we're in Day Street. Where were you?
I was in Nanai Kōwhai Street. Near the Tyler Cemetery. So grew up out there. And I think after I finished high school and I got to uni, I was like, okay, how am I gonna build a community here, or how can I contribute to the community? Because I grew up in a very tight-knit community, multicultural. So when I got to university, I was just like, okay, hey, I want to get involved as much as I can. So my second year, I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna run for VUSA, run for office. And it's been successful, and I've enjoyed it. So nothing's better than giving back to students to make their experience better than what I had.
So as a VUSA president and VADSA president, are you also in each other's? Do you belong to VADSA and you belong to VUSA as well?
Well, do you?
I can explain this. So VUSA, the Student Association, is an independent organization from the university.
Oh, okay.
We get funded by the university to provide essential services, but most of the things that we do are very independent. So if we're doing political things, advocating for students, that's very separate from the university. And basically all the clubs and societies which Reese and VADSA would fall under, all under the university. VUSA used to run clubs and societies back in 2012, but we had to relinquish it because of some legislation change.
Oh, what was that?
So that was voluntary student membership.
Yeah.
So originally, when you started university, students were automatically going to the student union. But government was like, we don't want this. We want students to have a choice. And basically crippled a lot of student unions around the country and made us very financially unsustainable.
Right.
So we had to relinquish a bunch of our assets.
Was that part of the latest?
No, that was back in 2012.
Okay.
Back in the day.
Right.
So this is me talking about previous politics and whatnot and history. But we have been advocating years later now. We're in a better financial position and we do want these assets back so we can support students directly, but also we can give it back to the students, right? We want to encourage students to take up leadership and governance and, you know, get those tools that
Why would they remove students, student associations from being run by the universities? Did they have a reason for that?
The reason being was that basically they believed the university could do the things that the student unions were already doing. So they were like, okay, hey, we're going to fix this. We're going to change this. And so rather than your fees going to the student union, your fees go to the university now, and they dictate. They dictate. So it removed a lot of our bargaining powers and our, power to basically be a union. It's the same way you see with general unions where they get crippled from the bottom, cut their legs off, and then they're not able to actually provide anything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But we've been, since 2012, 2011, we've been able to rebuild ourselves, not only as a brand, but also as a student union advocating for students.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of the revenue that we get now is through the services that we provide. One example is bus passes through different campuses.
Yeah.
We do discounted rubbish bags as well. Subsidized rubbish bags for students.
Is that for their homes?
For their flats.
Yeah.
People that have flat. And then we also provide an advocacy service that's independent from the university. So how this works is if students have any issues with the university, if that's academic, well-being, or if the university isn't doing the best for them, they can come to VUSA. We have two wonderful advocates that do some really good work, and they're able to advocate alongside you to the university on the misdoings of the university or if they've been in bad faith to our students.
Yeah, because notoriously when power and finance is removed from the grassroots, the university or whatever governing body will not take up those needs, right?
Yeah. Definitely not.
No, they won't. I think, like a lot of the things that we do, like have to apply for funding, we have to apply for funding through the university. You'd assume it'd be VUSA, but it's not. I mean, we interact with Liban a lot. We interact with USA a lot. But most of it is university.
Right.
Because the university...
So they still have the governing power, the umbrella-ing, but they're not doing anything. This is interesting.
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, this is... As the university is a big institution, there's just different parts.
Right.
So, what I basically... Most of my talking points is that, we could provide more essential services to clubs and societies. We can pump more money into it.
Yeah.
I guess throughout the years, we've seen that they've been lacking in that space when it comes to funding clubs or startup clubs or whatnot.
Yeah.
Because the philosophy we go by is by students for students.
Yeah.
We want to run by students.
Boo-boo.
And right now it's run by university staff that, don't need to run it. I'm saying that very politely because I'm saying let's give it to the students because who knows students better than,
than the students.
Than the students.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest issue that you can recognize with that is like a lot of the groups like FATS a big one for they love to advocate and a lot of the time against the university because the university's downfalls, but that also comes with issues of whether or not they'll take away our funding because that's the same people that we have to go through to get the funding.
So when you're applying for funding as an umbrella, your umbrella, they will be managing all the funding, so whatever you're writing into your funding, so they're actually managing it like it's theirs.
Yeah, and that goes for clubs and societies in general. So basically, the process they do, most of like clubs like VATSA, is that you put in funding proposals and then you basically articulate what you want to do for the year, and the university, basically university staff, it's called a club service, they basically allocate funding. So you can get funding between $100 to $3,000.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the club funding pool hasn't increased for the last 10 years.
So do you get to go outside of
the university.
Of the university.
Like external,
yeah,
funding.
Like with ACC or ethnic
honestly,
communities?
Yeah, so some clubs and societies are onto it, so they're able to get different grants and funds. For example, the VUW Law Society, they get a lot of funding from law firms and whatnot, so they get a lot of money.
Because they're quite up there.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty up there.
I'm part of it. Insane. But, yeah, I mean, we do get funding from other sources this year, at least.
Yeah.
In the past, no. We're a young club.
Young club,
But we are planning to expand our...
Yeah, because it's really important because... I'm just thinking about like what we do on the Black House here, right? And I'm dealing with funding and funding applications and whatnot. You can't run something in 2025 without being able to put something behind it. I have to pay for stuff. Everything has to pay. Yeah. So when you guys are applying for funding, it's so essential for you to be able to deliver the services that you need, that you are able to reach out. Do you think? Are there caveats on where you can reach out for funding? There's certain places you can go and other places you can't go, or is it pretty much wherever you find the funding, great, it's just about getting those applications in?
I think a lot of, like, if we're talking clubs and societies in general, some clubs are just better off and some aren't. Like, for example, with VETSA, it's more like finding different avenues to get funding.
Right.
But I guess for VETSA, if we compare it, for example, to VICOM, that's the Commerce Society. Commerce Society has a better chance of getting more funding, like there's more space for them to move around because they work with a lot of firms like Deloitte, EY, all those big organizations up in. But VETSA has to, I guess, scramble, right?
We have to scramble. Yeah. We've got a strong message behind us why we're doing what we're doing, but it's not supported by a lot of people. And
that kind of leads into my first question, and I was going to talk to you about priorities for your student associations this year. So, leading into that, about what do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
Why do I think that is? I think it comes with the image of the. Of the way the companies want to present themselves and what they attach themselves to. The same way that, it's easier for VicCom to get funding from Deloitte because they're attaching themselves to a students association and giving them support, saying that, we're supporting students who are already in this degree. We're going to help them get out. You know, it's a good message.
So there's ongoing jobs or something offered,
ongoing
scholarships.
Jobs. Yeah, so it's good for their investors is how you have to think about it. How is this going to be good for us? It's different. We have a message behind we're a community.
So VADSA, just for our listeners, stands for Victorian African Diaspora
Student
Association.
Yeah. It was VASA, but it changed to
It was VASA, yeah, because I think the diaspora is a lot wider than just Africa, right? So, and this is interesting because I was, as I do, researching the internet. There are 53 active incorporations in New Zealand with the word Africa or African in it. Where are they and why are they not supporting our students?
That's a good question.
It's a good question. Do you want to speak to it?
I can speak to it.
Bring your mic closer, bro. I want to hear every single word.
Sweet. Yeah, definitely. A lot of, I guess, me being in a position where I'm able to see a lot of organizational structures and whatnot, I guess for me, I've been able to, like, the place that I work in for student associations, we have, like, an umbrella organization that covers us called the Aotearoa Tertiary Students Association, and that's all the student unions. And I think this is where the African community lacks, where we don't have an actual governance strong umbrella organization that is able to not only provide funding but also basically make these groups very sustainable, because let's be honest, we can't keep waiting on local or central government to pump out money to ethnic groups. It doesn't work that way anymore. So we actually have to use our key relationships to touch base with a lot of key stakeholders. I know for a fact there's a lot of Africans in this country that have a lot of money, and they're actually keen to put money into these organizations or groups that are building up. But it starts with building connections.
Who are they, and how can we direct them over here? How as we can well direct them?
If you're listening, if you're listening right now, contact me.
Contact you
immediately.
But yeah, that's where I guess that's where it starts, right? Because you know,
we don't know who they are.
We don't know who they are. So it's I guess an umbrella organization, like you said. We have so many incorporated societies
and charities that are active.
They're active, but you know, there isn't anyone that's actually going around the country meeting with these people and be like, hey, let's all come together and let's see how we can work all together. I think that's why big, you know, organizations around the country have worked so well, because they all come together, build something bigger than themselves.
Do you think it's the factionalizing of African people in New Zealand? That's definitely what it is.
I definitely think, like, for example, anytime I travel a lot to Melbourne, I have family over there, and that's an example of what community building and what oriented around community looks like. The factions are not even there. Like, they might be there, still there, you know, a few there and
but
here.
They're not dominant.
They're not dominant.
Yeah.
I guess here it's, you know, each for their own, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, it doesn't have to be that way. But
yeah,
like
I've watched 40 years of it. So, you know what I mean? I know what you're talking about. And I was also so impressed that they recognize African Australian as a identity, and also that. Oh, when that stuff happened with the police and Sudanese youth.
Yep.
That whole the way that the Sudanese lawyers
pushed back,
it was impressive.
Definitely.
And I'm thinking, where are all our African lawyers in New Zealand? Who are they? What do they do?
I guess it goes back. I'm not here to attack people, without a doubt. It's more just, you know, we have to get away from that each for their own, structure that we've been built into. And I think we can go on for hours talking about how that's basically an effect of colonization and whatnot. But these things,
and internalizing it
and whatnot. But these things are changeable. Like, we see it in all around Australia in different areas and different communities.
Yeah, you know? It was weird coming back because I'd gotten used to that over there, and then you come back and like, hang on a minute, New Zealand should be like streaks in here, you know, ahead. Yeah. It's almost feels like it's regressed to a lot of us older ones that grew up here.
Yeah.
But and the other thing is too, especially during a time of social and economic uncertainty.
Yeah.
How are you seeing the rest of 2025 kind of unfolding?
How's it playing out?
Yeah, playing out right now.
So, I think it's going on track, but not as smooth as you'd like it to be. You will never be the way you plan it to be.
Yeah,
you know, definitely not the way I planned it to be. But it's going in a smooth direction so far. I mean, we're working with ACCW, the good part.
You say it with a smiling face, honey.
I'm saying it with a smile on my face. We're working with the good part of ACCW. As coming back to that point, that that factionalization, I think we've managed to break that in our group so far, which is what I've seen a model of it, what it's meant to be.
Yeah,
you know. As I said, we've grown significantly to where we were last year, and it's connection with people that they don't even care where you come from, what kind of Africa. It's like just comparing experiences, you know, because it's
having a sort of common heritage and a common locality where you find yourself, you know,
because it's a recognition of the separation between what happened in Africa and what's going on now in your life, like making that part stagnant, and now put that part of your life stagnant, and now this is a new path going forward. And this is the way we're supposed to be. We're supposed to recognize each other, and that we are all going to be treated the same, no matter where in Africa you're from. If you look like us, we're going to be treated exactly the same.
Mm.
It doesn't matter. So it's recognizing that one point, and then going from there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what brought us together, like, properly.
And, you know, we all find ourselves here in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
You've grown up... Did you grow up in Oz or here?
I grew up here. I was born and raised out in the Havelli, so...
You're like this boy behind you. Yeah, born and raised in Wally. And, you know, that whole thing of foreignizing us all the time. And so with that comes the stereotypes of who are the foreign people when we're not all foreign people. We're born here.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you want to talk about it?
Yeah, no, I think for me, I've been able to progress very quickly through society.
Yeah.
I think the best thing you could ever do is, you know, get out that box that they tried to throw you in.
Mm.
I think the best thing you could ever do is actually get away from the box and continue to stay away from the box. Because the last thing you want to do is constantly fall back into the narratives of what society has been built on. The marginalizations of communities, the marginalizations of African people. And I think the best thing that I've ever done, and I remind Reese these and anyone that comes through university, I'm just like, you know, stay in your lane, you know, occupy your lane as much as you can. Things are going to be thrown at you no matter what. But the best thing you can do is actually like shut out that noise and just continue to be great in however way you want to do it. Because I guess the world that we live in, you know, a lot of the narrative is, okay, you have to be successful, you have to do it quickly. Not really.
And that kind of brings us to our next point, because growing up in New Zealand, you have a different understanding of poverty, right?
Yes.
Much different understanding from Africa. And I really hate comparing the two, because I've seen abject poverty.
Yes.
In Australia, I've seen it here, and I've seen it in Africa. And it's, I think it's relevant to wherever it is, right? So being aware that there is such a thing as poverty in New Zealand, and with growing concerns around student poverty, rising rents, mental health, the stress of working much longer hours, what kind of support are students asking for, and what role, and I'm not going to say the universities, I'm going to say the organisations, what should they play? What's the role that they play?
I mean, I can probably touch on this. I guess the role that VUSA plays is very massive. We advocate for probably around 18,000 students.
Wow, that's a lot.
On our membership.
That's a small town.
Yeah, it's a small town. So these things, you know, and plus we hit the... There's a 10% population of students in Wellington.
Yeah.
So we actually have a massive shift. So I guess this year, for example, with cost of living crisis still here, with, you know, a lot of students living in shit flats, there's going to be a massive change or massive engagement in local body elections. Because I think, you know, young people will also, just people in general have understood that you're not going to get things out of central government, mainly the government that we have right now. You know, you just don't expect anything good. You know, and actually start focusing on those other organizations such as Wellington City Council that are directly going to impact your community. So,
what could they do? What could they do better?
Wellington
like
City Council?
City councils and councils around.
Just in general, just get rid of all this bureaucracy where, you know, you say you're going to do a lot of things and you're going to resolve all these issues, but 3 years passes, you haven't actually done anything, and there's a lot of back and forth. So I guess what we're advocating for this year, for example, we did a referendum with our student body back in March, and we asked them, hey, what's the one issue in Wellington that is, you know, basically fucking everything up for you?
Yeah.
And the number one was job economy and the transitioning into jobs out of university. Because if we look at the data, we're seeing a lot of, you know, students after they leave university are just get on a one-way flight to Oz. And that's because the systems that we have in place haven't been made sustainable to actually empower those critical thinkers of society, but also those people that want to become nurses, doctors, give back to the communities.
I think critical thinkers is a big one.
Yeah, definitely.
There definitely was no work. I did, was it Anth and Soch?
Yep.
When I came out of there, there was nothing here to use it.
And we saw the government last year cut a massive chunk out of the Marsden Fund that covers humanities and those critical degrees that actually build up our society. So we're actually seeing a massive downfall of their spiraling, but we have encouraged our students that if you want this change to happen, get out there and
speak up.
Also use your civic privileges, that is to vote. Vote people into local body that will actually care about student issues, and won't use you guys as a talking point. So a lot of the stuff you still will be doing this year is advocating around local body elections, but also advocating a lot of the things that the council wants to incorporate, such as the city safety plan, which I have been very critical of this year.
Tell me about that.
So city safety plan is something that came out of the long-term plan by Wellington City Council. It's basically to cover, you know, the revamp of safety around the city, which we all agree with. We want to be in a safe city, but the way you do it has to be the correct way. And I guess right now, where the council is lacking is actually incorporating all these things they talk about. Because they'll have this plan of, okay, we're going to put in safe places, we're going to do this and whatnot. But it's very slow because they're waiting on these bigger projects to finish up, for example, with the Golden Mile. But I've told them, and VUSA resubmitted their long-term plan submission last week because they've been making so many re-amendments to the
plan
that you have to go back and forth and then do your resubmission again. And that's because, once again, it's the bureaucracy that has come into councils.
It sounds like a lot of time wasting.
Which happens.
Meanwhile, people are dying.
Yeah. You know, like, in the violence on Courtney Place is pretty, like, I'm not really interested in going at night.
So, yeah, I think now they've finally put the foot down, which is weird because you're doing an election year where, you know, if a new council comes in, they're just basically going to either revert it or they're going to reduce it. So it's going to be very interesting this year, but I've always been advocating for a city that's safe, but also incorporate things that we can actually see that are going to make the city safer, you know? You can't have these, you know, massive paragraphs on your website saying, okay, this is how we want to make the city safe, but you haven't actually incorporated a lot of the things.
No action has been done.
Definitely.
Yeah
visible action, mind you. Yeah, I think like that's part of what we're doing with the petition right now, is that specifically the safety plan,
Safety plan is a part. That's, you mean the petition?
The petition,
the actual petition. Okay.
The actual petition.
Because there's another safety plan as well.
Because that's what we're speaking to. Trying to get the amendments, because that's what getting that amended to include our wants from the petition. Which is like, most of that we changed the direction of just being for ethnic communities to a wider goal of protecting the youth in general.
And I think that's important, right? I think you just can't, nowadays, when you're advocating to local government or even central government, you have to take a collective approach that, you know, that one person doing it by themselves doesn't work anymore, because they can just pick you off and be like, okay, well, there's not really a general consensus for this. But if you get everyone on the same, you know, same place, same time, and using your voices, people will actually listen. So,
because I guarantee you, if you ask 10 people at random in town on a Saturday night, like tonight, you can go and do it, they will tell you, all of them, that they don't feel safe. It's the truth, you know. It's you have to travel in groups for that reason. Which is what we're trying to change. Hopefully it passes through.
So, with the current political climate, particularly with changes in a lot of government policy around education, immigration, social services, I want to bring us back to students, migrant students, African students, and students of the diaspora. How do you see that impacting students that way? Oh, from those backgrounds, sorry. Because I see a lot of things being spoken about on public forums, but I don't often see our faces up there contributing. Do you want to say something about that?
I can briefly touch on this. Definitely. I guess the political climate that we live in right now and the environment that we live in is getting polarized each day as we go, you know. Politics has gone into that avenue of very volatile, crazy talking points and or specific agendas being pushed. And I don't think there's no way of, you know, reverting back to that normal, nice politics.
Was it ever normal
Probably not, you know, but if we're talking to normal nice, is actually having good conversations and disagreeing with each other respectfully. But now we've gotten to a point where, you know, we've seen those populist,
the cancel culture,
but also the populist agenda where, you know, we see a lot of the Trump talking points. If you see what Trump does in the US, it's a lot of things such as, okay, we need to deport people, all that stuff. These things that sound normal, but at the same time, they can actually marginalize certain communities. Which we're starting to see now with a lot of, you know,
in the States as well. It's insane.
So here we're seeing a lot of anti-DEI rhetoric. So that's the diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Are we seeing that now in New Zealand?
Seeing that now, and we're seeing people directly attack that. So,
which to me is really, it's almost like, can people please make up their minds? Because there was this whole push
for DEI.
And now that, no, that's all, like, definitely. What is, I don't understand the opposition to equity.
Yep.
Well, because that's why it was there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess the opposition is that, you know, people just don't like these nice to haves. Well, they're not really. Mm. People would argue, okay, these are nice to haves and we don't need them, but mm. they're actually essential for building communities and also keeping yeah. a society, I guess, built on good foundation, mm. built on good values. Mm. And if you remove those values, you're going to have a very conflicted society.
You'll have Australia.
Yeah, you'll have Australia. So.
The good part of Australia, yeah, the other part. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess, honestly, for our other communities who are mm. directly for us students, yeah. I'm not a student anymore. I completed my degree, but for Reese and, you
what
know,
was your degree?
I did a Bachelor of Arts majoring in criminology and two minors in sociology and social policy.
Oh, right.
But, you know, for students that are coming to university mm. Alongside Reese and whatnot, university is going to become more volatile places. Because, yeah. as I saw last week, there's an amendment being changed to the Education Act.
What's that?
So the Education Act is basically the Education and Training Act. Mm-hmm. It's basically the act that covers tertiary, primary school, and basically how you get taught and whatnot. And I guess the one that's going to impact universities is the amendment to have free speech at universities. And this basically hindered, well, this is basically going to have a drastic impact on our minority, you know, communities, because universities will be basically pinned to the wall and say, hey, because the legislation has been changed, you have to accept all these volatile speakers, lecturers who want to come spew their nonsense
yeah.
as students.
Right.
So as much as people would say, okay, well, free speech is important, there's a difference between free speech and hate speech.
Yeah. And where do you draw the line?
That's where, I guess, where people, you know, fall into that great spot.
I always find it's like, how well do people actually understand the impacts of colonialism mm-hmm. and all the things that have come from that?
Definitely.
Really depends on how they understand what's free speech and not mm-hmm. and hate speech.
Yeah.
And when they just circle the sinkhole of the N-word, I get really exhausted. Do you get exhausted with that? Still have that conversation, like that's the biggest problem that mm-hmm. we have.
Yeah.
I mean,
it feels like you're just going in circles.
Going in circles.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you're not using the N-word, everything's all good.
Mm.
I mean, in my personal life, my stepfather actually classified us on census in New Zealand as Negro.
Yeah.
It was filled in. It wasn't a pre-fill, I don't think. But the last time I saw it on a form was actually a form. It was an enrollment form for a course.
Mm.
And we were doing security, and this was in Perth. And all the African people in the room hit that word. We went, the N-word there, and I was just like, what, are they still using this here? You know, and that was 2009.
That's insane.
That was 2009, yeah. Mm. And that's, to me, that's pretty crazy, and the fact that hate speech, that they can't find, that people are not educated enough to know about the impact, to know the difference, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I find it sort of like, is this just, I don't want to deal with that, or is it that I'm really ignorant because I don't really believe that all the time?
Yeah, and probably just back to your point, and I'll pass it to Reese after saying this. I think this environment is not going to get any nicer. And I guess the best thing we could ever do is actually come together as a community and push back.
Mm.
For example, we saw that with the Treaty Principle Bill. We saw 90% of Aotearoa say no. This conversation is divisive.
Yeah.
It's made to break communities up, which was super important, because if we actually continue those divisive conversations, we're going to get to a point that Australia got to with the voice referendum last year.
That was shocking.
And even after the referendum, regardless if you voted yes or no, it left a bad taste in everyone's mouth afterwards.
It's insane that. But then when you look at the history of Australia,
It makes sense. But
because there's a lot of push down history.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like they don't recognise that, you know, when they got rid of slavery mm-hmm. and the Atlantic, those old business models just moved down to the Pacific. Yep. So, you know, they've experienced those kinds of marginalization there. And I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I saw that.
Yeah, it's quite good that that got axed in the second reading last week. Yeah.
The treaty bill.
The principles bill, because that would have changed a lot.
But are they still going back for another reading, or is it?
No, it's done.
It's done.
It's done. It's axed. that bill has gone to cremation, which is good, but the conversation is still there. So people like David Seymour is going to use anything that he can find, any specific agendas. But like I said, they have organizations that are very nasty organizations that are going to rally different parts of Aotearoa.
Because they want it to happen.
Yeah, they want it to happen. So they're going to use different avenues to get it, keep going.
And keep rallying the old brown face to be the racist. Yes. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
it's crazy that people can't see that. They go, oh, but if that person's brown and they're saying that, it must be okay.
No, they're uneducated.
Yeah.
Yeah. That bill would have changed the interpretation of everything. Yeah, no,
everything.
Yeah, it's really good that it just shows you the power of what you can do if you everyone stands up for an important message, which is really important. It's the basis of advocacy.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all right. I'm going to stay with students of African diaspora heritage. What specific challenges do you think still need to be addressed on campus in terms of belonging, representation, and cultural safety? I know one I came across when I was at uni, and that was being allowed to pray. Have a prayer room.
I think that's changed drastically now.
Has it? Yes.
There's a lot of prayer rooms, and also there's a lot of dedicated spaces to our students, which is good.
Yeah.
I guess one thing that, you know, that needs to be addressed is racism within the institution.
Right.
So I remember back in 2023 when I first came into VUSA, at that time the university was going through a lot of changes, a lot of structural changes, a lot of different senior leadership. And they had this, around the time, they had these, they had an initiative called the Anti-Racism Initiative.
Right.
And it was basically to address racism within the institution, within faculties and whatnot.
Yeah.
But what we saw is that after the people that were running this initiative burnt out and couldn't continue, we just dropped dead.
And they would burn out having to deal with that every day.
Yeah, having to actually build a model that, okay, we're going to teach these faculties how to, you know, not be racist. And but that's a continuing conversation that I'm going to continue this year.
Yeah. So that's critical race theory?
No, I'm not critical race theory, like an anti-racism initiative. So actually, you know,
teaching them about what is acceptable and what's not.
What isn't acceptable because, universities are a very massive place.
And
people are going to deal with racism no matter what. You know, there's no way you can get away from it.
You can't get away from it, full stop.
And it's a systemic issue. It's not an issue that is just, you know, it's pops not
just,
up there and
yeah,
there.
It's not just about name calling.
Yeah.
Because anybody that calls you a name, you can call them a name right back.
Yeah.
But if that name and that belief and that understanding removes you of any power or agency, then it's an issue, right?
Then it is an issue, I think, like, the most important thing, like, a thing that I recognize right now is recognizing that the university needs to recognize that all people are different and have different life experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, Wellington is a great example of a very, very multicultural city.
It's very, very diverse.
We are from different parts of the world. There are so many international people here that it's important for an institution like our university to recognize and to find ways to include and be sensitive about certain things, because we all haven't learnt the same way. I mean, there's a lot of people in my group who haven't learnt the same way, haven't been brought up in the same way to do things a certain way. You know, I think a recognition of that is important because it can affect the way you do your work, the way you can operate, the way you learn. I think that's essential. Because what happens...
And also people come from different status groups that come to university.
Yeah, socioeconomic groups. Yeah. When they start to feel like they... Because that can create a sense of, like, non-inclusion, you know, you feel like you're not included in things, you feel like you're not understanding, just because of the way they're doing things, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, the end result can become a sense of, what's the word I'm looking for, like, if you don't feel like you're...
It'd be toxic.
Yeah, it becomes toxic, yeah. Yeah, there's a word I'm looking for, I'll come back to it, but what I'll describe it, it's you start to feel like you're living a different life because you have to act differently.
Yeah.
Oh, code switching.
But there's another word. You feel like you're playing your part in somebody else's life. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, like, the whole goal is for you to be yourself and to be the best version of yourself. The reason why you go to university is to educate that version of yourself to be the best, you know?
The best that you can be.
The best you can be, right?
But yeah.
So many
factors. And be treated with the same value, you know, as everybody else there. And everybody. Yeah. I always found it weird because I went to uni as a mum. And I started at 30. I was a high school dropout. And I always felt like I was, you know, and, you know, a single parent. So the different struggles and strains that I faced, other students didn't face. But I also found it not like a place that I could comfortably hear what I really thought. But I observed. I was a very good observer because, you know, you learn to be that when you grow up in New Zealand and you don't belong to other groups. So you learn to be like that anyway. And I really found my political leanings at uni. I'm so totally joined the socialist. I wanted to be on every protest. But the other thing was that I realized in these groups, they weren't really thinking about parents who go and study that they've got these other responsibilities. And I remember there was a protest and I said, no, I can't go because you've got no plan when we get arrested. So I'm not going, you know, like I'm not doing it. But, you know, because what they were suggesting doing might not have been favoured. And sure enough, I saw, you know, some of the guys in the group running down the street with the cops. So that's why I'm not there, because I've got two kids to look after. Yeah. But just not being aware that people come to education at all from all different angles, right?
Yeah.
You know, and having this kind of one track, sort of like if you're a student and you've got to be like that, it doesn't work.
No, the one-fits-all system.
It makes it hard.
Yeah, the one-fits-all system has changed drastically. The modern university student has changed, though. And I think that's something that I've been, you know, telling the university constantly, which they are very receptive to now. I think Vic Uni has changed drastically since the previous regime has left. And like when I call them
so what do you mean?
Yeah, when I say previous regime, I'm saying like the senior leadership has changed a lot since 2023. So basically, you have a new senior leadership, a lot of new leaders. They have come out of different places, different, you know, polytechnics, different areas.
Because the CEO of the uni makes quite a lot of money, right?
The vice chancellor. Vice chancellor makes a hefty amount of money, but I think he does a really good job compared to the previous one.
Right.
He's more receptive.
I think we have to give Vic its flowers when we've come to that. They're a lot better than a lot of the universities.
Now, which has, you know, back in 2023, when I mentioned 2023, the university went through a financial instability moment where they had to cut a lot of jobs because they weren't looking after the books in the right way. And then after that, a lot of the senior leadership that fucked up disappeared very quickly.
Really?
They moved on. So a new vice chancellor comes in 2023, basically says, okay, we need to fix things. It's going to take. There are some changes that are going to be bad, which are cutting jobs, cutting back some courses, but it's to set us up really well.
Yeah.
2 years later, enrollment numbers are, you know, probably higher than what they were in 2019. And also they're looking.
So this is post-COVID.
Post-COVid in general too. So, but also in general, they're looking at a massive, hefty amount of international students for trimester two in July. So, which is good for Reese because you're going to have more African students to communicate with. So,
I need to advertise our group. try to get them involved.
Like, you know, collaboration between associations like VUSA and VADSA, strengthening cross-cultural solidarity and advocacy across wider student populations. Do you see yourselves like working together on
100%? Yeah,
you know, like it'd be. I sort of see you guys working together, doing the hustle of finding the funding that you need, so that you've got the resources. Because I notice with a lot of our organizations, charities, the problem is always we don't have the funding, but the funding is out there.
Yep, you just have to tap into it.
You just have to tap into it. So how do you have plans of working with each other to tap into stuff? We can't hide it all, Levan. We've got to like share the wealth, you know?
I definitely agree.
For sure.
I think one thing that we do is we delegate those powers that, you know, that be in the community. So we have a lot of like societies, groups that speak on behalf of students.
Right.
Because one thing that VUSA has moved away from, that a lot of student unions are starting to move away from, is that we don't speak for all our students anymore, unfortunately. We have other associations. For example, at Vic, we have the Māori Students Association, Ngāi Tauira, that, you know, that used to, back in the day, used to be recognized as a club or rep. rep group.
Mm. Right, yeah.
Now they're recognized as a student association. So we're treaty partners now. So they basically sit. Mm. So if we're talking around the 1990s, this is how the relationship looked. Now the relationship is like this, you know, and they're able to advocate for Māori students because I'm sorry, you know, I can't speak for Māori students because I want to give it to those people that are directly connecting with their tauta Māori to speak for them. And that same goes for Reese. Like, you know, I'm speaking for the whole student body, but Reese is directly connected with those African students.
Right.
So he knows what's going on in that space.
Yeah.
Because the last thing I want to do is come off as very ignorant and be like, okay, well, African students are very better off. And then I haven't actually had a good conversation with Reese where, you know, his perspective would be completely different, that, you know, there are a lot of African students that aren't being supported financially or academically through university. So
how is it at the moment? Are our African students getting, African diaspora students getting the support they need?
I believe they're doing okay. We don't have any problems just yet. But we're trying to, I'm trying to make sure, like, I tell them that if you do have any problems with that, come to me and then I'll go to Liban, you know, because we can't actually do anything in terms of advocating for academic support. That is USA's job. But my thing is sending them to USA.
Okay.
Because, you know, the hardest thing is for them to go to USA. They're, you know, chatting to somebody who's not from, you know, your group.
Yeah.
Because you feel very isolated in that moment.
Yeah.
And the whole point is, my job is to make sure you're not feeling isolated. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
VADS is carrying on a long tradition of African groups being there since the 60s.
Yeah.
So you should be proud of yourselves that you're actually, you know, you've gotten to the stage of an, you know, official kind of organization.
Official organization, but also something that I see will be more sustainable than the groups that have been before. Because the last thing that you want is a group that, you know, is active for 1 year and then disappears the next year.
Yeah.
I don't think that's super helpful sometimes. But I think that what Reese and his group are doing now is, you know, they're actually looking at the sustainable side of it and looking towards the future, because the last thing you want to do is actually focus heavily on 2025 and forget that there's going to be some more African students coming to university in 2026.
Because, like, that's the whole thing. We don't want that to disappear at any point. Like, we'll be honest, the VATSA was quite small at the end of last year.
It was a lot of work, you know, and I just looked at us. Young people are just so overworked now because you have to work 80 hours to get the benefit of like 30, which to me is crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
You know?
And it's insane. It really is insane. It's a lot of work to put into this group. It really is. That's what, I'm glad we have a massive team. But at the end of last year, VATSA was at risk of being gone, you know?
Because you've got to support your leaders. Leaders that are trying to keep these things going. Yeah. You've got to get in behind them.
Yeah, definitely.
And even if you can only give a couple of hours a week.
Yeah. I mean, I give a lot of my time to it. I mean, I'm also giving a lot of my time to law and to, you know,
your job.
Work.
Yeah.
But I make sure that I have to balance that and delegate things to the rest of my executive team because it's a really important...
You'll burn out otherwise.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's a really important thing that this keeps going on.
Mm. Yes.
And that we're trying to find a way for VATSA to still be there even when, you know, like, because the reason why we weren't going to be there is because there weren't going to be any students part of it, you know? Like, people were starting to think that VATSA was no longer a thing. They weren't just sure where VATSA was, you know? That's what we're trying to change, but we're trying to make sure that when I'm gone... This will not be the case.
Yeah,
definitely.
Legacy, eh?
A legacy, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, if you need help, I've been teaching myself how to do funding, so, you know.
Cool.
And I'll show you for free.
If I just want to remind Reese, I'm, like, I'm always, like, a phone call or message away.
Yeah.
Because, you know, compared to VATSA, I'm in a position where I'm getting paid for the work that I do.
Right.
So I get paid full-time living wage.
God,
and
I don't.
And all that stuff. So, you know, I'm actually keen to help them where I can, where we have a lot of our student leaders that volunteer their time.
Mm.
And, you know, on the verge of burnout and whatnot.
Yeah, because you got to think mental health, and mental health is a big thing now. People are burning out because of the amount that they're putting in, and maybe they're not seeing. Not everybody is as persistent like a dog with a bone, like me, because there's been times where I get to Christmas and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do anything. Leave me alone. I'm going to crawl into a corner, you know, because it's just been a long year. But if you've got that vision and you hold on to that vision, right, and you've got that, idea and you just hold on to it, yeah, good things will come out of it.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they will. I mean, we've got a lot of plans. We've been instituting them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, it's a matter of getting that train rolling. Mm. I mean, it's moving, but it's speeding up right now. Yeah. So we're
and I'm
there.
Definitely looking forward to having you create your own discussions so that
it's
the people
works.
Out there with the money hear what's going on.
Definitely.
See where the need is and respond to that. What do you think?
I think that's great. I think we'll be good from this year. I think we'll be set up. We'll set ourselves up. We'll set ourselves up in the public eye for people to come and back and want to support us. A lot of people who are graduating and going into jobs now.
Yeah.
Going to
your language.